I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Zoe Lee Peterson joins me now. She's just published a new novel, Next Year for Sure. I'll get her to tell us about this book, about the 9-year relationship that Catherine and Chris are in, and Emily, who comes into the scene. The book has been described as luminous and poignant when it illustrates insights into relationships, polyamory, love, and friendship. Zoe Lee Peterson has had her fiction appear in such publications as The Walrus, Event, Grain, Prism International, and more. She's won many prizes, including the Far Horizons Award for Short Fiction and the Peter Hinchcliffe Fiction Award. She lives in Vancouver after living all over the United States and having been born in England. This is her first novel, which is published by Doubleday. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Zoe Lee Peterson. Zoe, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So as I told you before we started, I've started the book, and I'm quite enjoying it. A lot of the notices are saying how much the reviewers are enjoying the book. As someone who has spent all this time with the book over the years writing it, now that it's out, people are buying it. It must be gratifying to get those kind of notices, is it?
It's definitely gratifying. I mean, I love knowing that people are enjoying the book, but I think just knowing that people are reading the book is almost as exciting to me. When you're writing alone in your room for all those years and wondering if there's any point, if you're wasting your time, if it's ever going to be read, that's a really sort of despair-inducing kind of solitude. So to finally have it out into the world after all these years and have people, and just know that people are reading it, just means the world. And the fact that they're, or at least some of them anyway, are enjoying it, even better.
Were there a lot of moments where you were worried as you were writing this, whether it was good or not? I mean, I talk to authors all the time, and I'm fascinated at that sort of angst that they go through.
I didn't have a lot of angst that, I didn't have any angst about the book itself, about the quality of the book, in the sense that I liked it. And I think that's not always the case. Like, certainly when I've done creative projects in the past, I've done things where I feel like I have a vision for what I want, and I'm not quite able to realize it. But in the case of this book, I really felt like, no, this is exactly what I want to say. This is exactly what I want to write. So I didn't have doubt in that sense. But I think I did have a very realistic doubt about whether the book would find its way into the world, whether it would find its way to readers. Because there's a lot of really, really good books that either don't get published or they do get published and nobody reads them, because there's so many books at the moment that it's hard to get noticed. So I had that anxiety every day.
Yeah. You actually set out to write a book about loneliness, is that right?
That's exactly right, yeah. That's what I was really sort of thinking about, is loneliness.
And so how did the book, say, evolve into what we have now with Next Year for Sure?
Well, I was thinking about loneliness, and I was thinking about, in particular, the loneliness that you sometimes have in a couple or inside of a relationship, where it's not that the relationship isn't working, it's not that the people aren't in love or they're estranged from each other. Really good, happy, healthy relationships where the people are the perfect partners for each other, but they're still lonely. And in the case of these two characters in the book, Chris and Catherine, I think part of what's happening is that they're at that stage in their life where a lot of their lifelong friends are starting to have kids and move to the suburbs or disappear into their careers. And they're becoming, as much as they have a close, intimate bond and a lot of companionship with each other, as a couple, they're becoming quite isolated from other people. And I think they feel stranded. And I think that's what led me to think about, like, well, what would it take for them to form an intimate connection with a new person? Like, some of their friendships that they're gradually losing are 10 or 15 years old, so there's a real intimacy there. But when you're in your, like, midlife, you're in your 30s or 40s or 50s, it's harder to achieve that kind of intimacy with a new friend. So I was really thinking about what would it take to precipitate them having that kind of tight bond with someone at this stage in their life. And in the end, what I decided is that they were going to meet someone, and one of them was going to start dating that person and open their relationship and sort of explore where that took them.
And that's Emily, right?
Yeah, so Chris and Catherine meet this woman, Emily, who Chris often encounters at the laundromat and develops kind of a all-consuming crush on. Mm-hmm. And Chris and Catherine have the kind of relationship where they openly share when they have crushes, and I think they normally just sort of are amused by crushes and sort of joke about them and talk about them, but never do anything about them. But this time, Catherine, I think because of this loneliness and this sort of desperation that she's experienced, says, you know what, why don't you ask her out on one date and try that, and then we'll figure out what to do next. That sort of sets things in motion.
So you said that they've been together, Catherine and Chris, about 10 years, is that right?
Yeah, just a little shy of, I think they've been together for 9 years, but yeah. Just a little shy.
How old are they when we first encounter them?
I never nailed it down, but I think most people are reading them as being in their mid to late 30s, and yeah. that seems reasonable to me.
Yeah. Sam, I'm about to hit 35.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that's the thing that I was wondering as I'm starting the book, is where mm-hmm. they are exactly in their life, because I guess the priorities that one has at this point in their life, in one's life, are a lot different than, say, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so what do you think brings, I mean, what happens at this? I mean, I guess someone who's about to turn 35 and someone who, and asking someone who has written a book about folks in this stage in life. I mean, mm-hmm. what are the priorities? What are the urgent things that one needs to think about? And what are Chris and Catherine thinking about at this time? About their priorities, say, and what they're looking for, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I think in my experience and I've recently been reading another book about this called The Middle Passage, and I think that what this book is saying really jibes for me, which is that being in your mid-late 30s, early 40s is, for many, many people that I know, a period of reinvention, and or maybe first reevaluation and then reinvention. And I think a lot of people have fought to be the person that they are, whether they're fighting to get clear of like a family of origin that doesn't accept them. I'm thinking of like LGBT people who are like sort of fighting their way for their own existence, or they've fought to get where they want to be in their career. They've kind of been, I think of it as a little bit in battle mode, where you're putting on armor and you're trying to achieve the things that you want to achieve. And then I think at the stage that Chris and Catherine are at, and to some extent that I'm at, there's a sense of, okay, I have a little bit of a breather. I've accomplished some of the things that I want to accomplish. And I'm suddenly realizing that some of the sort of coping strategies that have gotten me here are no longer serving me well. So I haven't really thought about this before your question, but I think I see this in Chris and Catherine, that they are really good people who have done really, really well, but they're starting to realize that the strategies that have gotten them this far aren't really going to work anymore. Hmm. They need to reevaluate and reinvent themselves.
It's that whole thing, I guess, of, as you mentioned earlier, that at this time of life, a lot of people around us have gotten married, have had kids,
mm-hmm.
and if you haven't, you're settling, if you will, and you're restless, and you're looking for the next big thing or the next challenge, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're right that if you haven't done those things, like I'm a person who hasn't had kids and isn't. Exactly. Well, you know, I'm a writer, so I don't really have a career in the traditional sense. Like, I don't go to the office 5 days a week.
You're not a 9-to-5, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of my peers, a lot of the people that I grew up with or went to high school with or graduated with are at very different stages in their lives and have very different outlooks and priorities and realities than I do. And I think you're totally right. If you're making those choices, you end up feeling a little unsettled or isolated or lonely. But I also think a lot of people who are making those choices are experiencing their own sort of crisis of, is this the right thing? Did I make the right choices? Am I doing life right? Am I happy? Am I fulfilled? And I think you can have those feelings and misgivings and doubts, whatever choices you've made. I think it's just part of the human experience.
Yeah, it's cycles, I guess, of life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I read somewhere that we shed our skin every 7 years.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I think that's something inside us does the same thing, if you will.
Yeah, I think that feels very true. I don't know anything about the science behind it, but my gut says that makes sense.
Yeah. So you've written a book here about polyamory that mm-hmm. I guess is one of the first books, isn't it, from a major publishing house?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the first. I just met someone at a writer's festival who mentioned a couple to me that had come earlier.
Yeah.
And, like, Jane Rule wrote a book that might touch on some open relationship stuff, but
yeah.
I don't think that the term polyamory was even around when Jane Rule was writing her books. So it's probably not the first, but it right now it feels like one of the first.
Yeah, and we're in a time. I mean, there's a show on cable that deals mm-hmm. with this, and you know, it's something that we're talking about finally. And, mm-hmm. and I guess for people listening to this who might think that you know, well, I mean, it's not nothing that we're accustomed to heretofore. So has it reached its time, if you will, in terms of coming out? I hate to use that word, but in the culture.
Yeah, I actually think coming out is a pretty apt word, because I think part of the reason that polyamory or consensual non-monogamy is starting to sort of come into the light and sort of come into its own and be something that is acknowledged and openly talked about is a direct result of the incredible leadership of the LGBT community. And, like, for the last several decades, they've been demonstrating to people that you do not have to hide who you are. You do not have to be ashamed of the way that you love and the way that you organize your family. And I think that has probably contributed to this sense in the poly community that we need to, we need to be visible and we need to be able to be honest and live authentic lives with integrity and not feel like we have to hide it.
Yeah, it's not like these relationships never happened before.
Absolutely. Right? They definitely happened before, but for like very real reasons, people often felt that they needed to hide the relationships, and because you could actually have real consequences if you were found or suspected to be living in an open relationship.
Yeah, and so the stigma around that. That's something, I guess, is one of the reasons why you wrote this book, right? You want us to have a discussion about what's happening and to bring it out into the open, right?
I would love to see that happen. I'm not sure that actually is what motivated me to write the book, but I would love to see the stigma be reduced and eventually eliminated. But honestly, my decision to include an open relationship was not that thought out and sort of instinctual. I just think of it as one of many ways to be in a relationship and kind of landed on it when I was trying to figure out the dilemma of these two characters and their loneliness. That's what I mean when I said I didn't set out to write about polyamory per se. It's one of many options. My characters also have to have careers, and there's many careers to choose from, and you kind of choose one that feels right. And I think there's many ways to organize your love and your relationship, and this was one of them, and it felt right.
I guess that's life in general, isn't it? It's largely instinctive,
yeah,
and we just land on we get to where we need to get to, right? Whether it's
yes,
the long way or the
stumbling around, yeah.
I guess the other thing that as I'm starting the book that I'm thinking about is that nothing is forever, that even though you find someone you love and you want to spend, you know, your time with them, things change or shifts in relationships, obviously.
Yeah.
As you're writing this, I'm wondering as the writer, as the creator of these characters and what happens to them, do you channel whatever experiences you might have had into the writing, or do you write a book about an ideal that you'd like, maybe?
I think I tend to do more of the former. I think I tend to channel my own experiences, and of course they get put through the blender of fiction and they come out looking all like messed up and not at all like my actual experiences, but you said at the beginning, nothing is forever, and I feel like one of the things that animated the original thinking about this novel for me is thinking about my own relationships, where I've had relationships that have changed and grown dramatically over the course of the relationship, where we started out as friends, and then we were together romantically, and then we were friends again, and that there was this continuous through line of harmony, and we always wanted the best for each other, and there was never any sense of you're breaking up with me and therefore I hate you. But I've also been in relationships where when those kinds of changes happened, when it went from being we're romantic partners to we are something else, it just completely imploded, and there was a sense of failure, that this relationship is over because it isn't continuing in the way that it was going. And so I was very interested in why does it work sometimes to have the nature of a relationship change and evolve in like a loving, harmonious way, and other times it explodes in your face. And I was very interested in that question. So with Chris and Catherine, I really wanted to see their relationship change, fundamentally change, in a way that sort of got at some of those questions of why does it sometimes work and other times not work.
So when you write a book, like next year for sure, do you come away with it with, say, an understanding or even wisdom about people and relationships that you didn't have before?
I do. I feel like it's hard to distill down into a couple points, but I definitely figured out some things that have vexed me my whole life and sort of bothered me my whole life, and I finally sort of got a handle on them, and now I wrote the book, and then because of how long it takes for the book to come out, I actually didn't read it for quite a while. It was about 18 months until I read the book the next time, and when I read it after 18 months away, I was taking notes on my own book as if I was reading someone else's book, and thinking, oh, that's a good point. I need to write that down so I remember that.
Yeah.
So, it definitely taught me things about myself, and I feel better informed about myself having written it.
Yeah, I guess they say the trick to memory is to write things down. And
mm-hmm.
so if you're writing things down, writing out, if you will, a novel, and then you put it away, and then you come back to it. It takes on a life of its own, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a thing. I think I'm going to do it again. I learned so much the first time.
The cover. Do you have a say in what the book looks like?
Well, I theoretically would have had a say, but as a hand out, the only say I had is I love this, and I think it's fantastic. So they sent it to me, and it was a beautiful cover, and that was the extent of my say. I couldn't be happier with it.
And so it represents for you what this book is? As the author, I mean, you feel that this is a...
I think so. I think, like, I would have never thought to represent the book that way. I wanted a much sadder, darker cover. I was proposing that they put, like, old line drawings of mammoths or really just dark imagery, sad imagery. And when they sent this to me, I just feel like it put a spin on the novel that I hadn't thought of myself yet. So I was very happy with it.
Because as I said, I started the book and it's often funny and, mm-hmm. and amusing. And so I think it sets the tone, if you will.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, you see the colors and they look dark.
Mm, yeah.
And that comes through as well.
Well, I'm so glad. I feel like I can't quite put my finger on what I love about it so much, but I feel very lucky because I'm very fussy about covers. I look at covers really critically and think a lot about covers, and I was very worried that I wasn't going to get a cover that I liked. So I'm glad to hear you say that it works to both bring out the humor of the book, because I did work to make sure that there was a lightness and a humor to it, but also brings out some of the darkness. Those are my two favorite things to put together, is humor and dark, or light and dark.
Yeah, that happens in every situation in life, isn't it? Doesn't
mm-hmm.
it, right?
Yeah.
Also at the heart of this book is a theme of friendship, and I guess the friendship between Catherine and Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're friends how long?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So I would guess it's been almost as long as Chris and Catherine have been together.
Yeah.
They met in grad school. Yeah, I would guess it's been, I don't know if it's just a little longer, a little shorter, but about 10 years.
And so when you think about friendship, what's going on in both of their lives and where do they come to in terms of their friendship as this book unfolds?
So there's one thing I don't want to say because I don't want I don't want to include any spoilers, but I do feel like they're kind of at a crossroads where they both want quite different things from the relationship, I think. I think Catherine would like to maintain the sort of the intimacy and the way that they used to be in each other's lives in a really, like, everyday, permeable, back-and-forth kind of way. So they were in grad school together. They lived across an alley together. They were in it. I imagine they had keys to each other's house and could come and go freely and, mm-hmm. like, go into each other's houses and, like, borrow food and take it out without asking. They had, like, a really sort of boundary-free friendship that I think a lot of people have with their best friend in their 20s. And I think Catherine would really, that's what she wants from the relationship. And I think what Sharon wants is she's growing up. She's, like, moved to a nicer, like, neighborhood. She's got a condo. She's, like, having kids. She's getting married. And I think that she would like to have a more, I don't know, age-appropriate, she might say, mature, she might say, relationship. I think both of those positions are completely valid. I understand where both of them are coming from, but they're at odds, and they're not dealing with it very well. They're not communicating their needs and desires to each other. They're just trying to dig in and get what they want out of the relationship.
Yeah, so here's the thing. We've talked about the relationship between Catherine and Chris and now Catherine and Sharon.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we grow up expecting certain things of a relationship,
mm-hmm.
you know, a relationship with a partner and
yep.
a friendship.
Yep.
And I guess a lot of us grow up thinking that once you find someone that you want to be friends with or that you want to be with, that these things stick, you know, that this is forever, you know.
Yes.
But dealing with the changes and these shifts, I guess that's the wisdom that one gets once they finish this book, is that nothing lasts. I mean, back to that point, isn't it? I mean, you know. And I guess that's what scares a lot of people. And I must say, as I'm talking to you now, starting the book and thinking about where I am in my life, I mean, I don't think I was prepared for a lot of this stuff that happens when one grows up.
I'm with you. I feel like not adequately prepared for that. I feel like when I was growing up, people were trying to scare me about all sorts of things that didn't come true, but nobody really prepared me for this aspect.
That does happen.
I think you're right, though, that like there is this expectation, particularly in romantic relationships, but also in friendships, that this is forever, that if a relationship ends, then it's a failure. And I also think there's this expectation that, like, once something is working, then it should never change, that you should cling to what works. And I feel like you can have either of those things, but you can't have both. You can either have a relationship that is forever, and because by nature of being forever, it is going to have to change and grow, or you can have a relationship that stays true to its original purpose and its original success, but because it is staying true to it, it cannot last forever. So I feel like you have to choose one, and I'm not saying one is right and the other is wrong, but I don't see how you can have both.
Yeah, because you'd spend the time, you know, cultivating the relationship, the friendship, and that can be fraught with all kinds of drama and so forth. And then you think, well, once you find that person you want to be friends with or that you want to be with, it's going to be fine. But then you have this. Yeah. Do you still work in a library?
I do. Yeah. Right now I work 2 or 3 days a week. I sort of go back and forth between being a sort of children's librarian and being a regular grown-up librarian. I kind of like doing a little bit of both. But yeah, I'm there a couple days a week.
And so, before I ask you what I want to ask you about your work, what's it like for you to work with books and then at home? I mean, have you got a big collection yourself?
You know, I used to have a big collection. It's gotten a lot smaller since I started working at a library, because now I'm pretty ruthless about not keeping books that I know I can always put my hands on at the library if I ever need them. So the books that I have tend to be books that either books that I refer to constantly, and I need to be able to refer to them within seconds of the need, as opposed to, oh yeah, I want to read that book again, I'll go to the library tomorrow and pick it up. So I keep that kind of book. And I also keep books that remind me of who I am. And I think, like a lot of readers, I feel like transformed by some of the books that I read. And when I have that experience with a book, when I feel like I'm not the same person that I was before I read this book, then I want to keep that book, because it's almost like keeping a journal for me to dip back into one of those books and remember that transformation.
Yeah. So as a writer, I guess it was always important for you to read. And I'm assuming, because a lot of other people are like this, so that one reads before they write. So when for you was it that after reading, maybe, that you decided that this is what you wanted to do as a career, say?
I started really, really young. I think that I was 5 when I wrote my first quote-unquote book. I put air quotes around it because it was probably about 20 pages long. But I started very, very young, and I wrote fairly obsessively from the time I was about 5 until the time I was about 20. But then I walked away from it for about 20 years for a number of reasons. But part of it was that I didn't feel like I could write the book that I wanted to write. I could sort of see the book that I wanted to write, and I could see my own experience. It wasn't so much skill, it was like my world experience wouldn't allow me to write the book that I wanted to write. So I stopped for 20 years, and then a few years ago I came back and started again, and this book next year for sure is the first thing that I've written.
And so what's it like now to see this cover at bookstores? I mean, is it available for circulation at the library where you work, say?
Yeah, it's at the library, it's in bookstores. It feels bizarre, it feels surreal, it's incredibly gratifying and rewarding, and it gives me a lot of relief, I think, maybe is the overriding sensation, because, like I said, when I was writing it, I had a very realistic concern that I would spend 5 years writing it, and then it would sit as a file on my desktop, and no one would ever read it. And I felt an enormous weight at that thought. So to see it on a bookshelf in a library gives me so much relief more than anything else.
Yeah, are you working on something new now?
I am. I'm not very far, but I have another novel that I'm working on, and a couple short stories sort of percolating along as well, but I have a novel that I'm feeling very consumed about, and I'm starting to have that same dread of, like, it's not going to work, or it's not going to get published, or it's not going to be read, and that, I think that means I'm going to finish it. When I start having that anxiety, it means I have the energy to finish it.
Yeah. Say, you'd written short fiction before, and won prizes for it. Mm-hmm. The transition between that and say, deciding to write a novel, I mean, one would assume that a novel is just a short story made longer. I mean, it's not, right?
Yeah, it's not. Like, they work different. The mechanics are a little different, and certainly the process is different. I really like short stories. I've resisted the idea of writing this as a novel, even though it came to me as a novel. I tried for a while to cram it into a short story and then into two short stories. And I really didn't want the burden of having to write a novel. I didn't want the commitment. I didn't want the... It's taxing. It's a lot. So I've resisted it mightily, but I think now I've learned my lesson, and I'm just going to give in to it.
And so is there a change that you have to say, go through in terms as you move from one to the other, short stories or novel writing?
I think so. I think I'm sure other people have been able to put their finger on this more concisely than I am, but I think it has to do with the arc and the transformation that happens. In a short story, it can be a very, very subtle turning of the character, a very, very subtle transformation. But in a novel, it really has to be more more deep and profound and lasting than that. And I don't know, maybe the thing I feel most is that it is so much longer than writing. It's just, I'm used to the sort of cycle of disappearing for 3 or 4 weeks and working really hard and then having someone read the thing and give me back like their interpretation, their reaction. To me, that's fuel to go write something else, is like hearing how people perceive it, how people interpret it, what it means to them. And to sustain that for years without getting that sort of feedback is, it's like going from being a sprinter to being a marathoner. You really have to build up the muscles and build up the endurance.
This has been such a pleasure talking to you today. I've
Thank
kept you,
you
longer than I said I would, but there was just a lot that I wanted to cover. So,
that's quite right. It's my pleasure.
Congratulations and continued good luck with this.
Thank you. Thanks for your great questions and the great talk.
Thank you very much. The book is called Next Year for Sure. It's published by Doubleday. Its author, Zoe Lee Peterson, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.